Welcome to Roundtable Talk, a podcast about longevity, senior services marketing, and the quality of life as one ages. Roundtable Talk is brought to you by Pavone Group and Varsity, a senior services agency focused on helping clients win the mature market. If you like the fresh perspectives we deliver in each episode, please give Roundtable Talk a 5-star review on the podcast service of your choice.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Varsity's Roundtable Talk. Today's guest is Kathy Perry, a renowned corporate energy expert who helps organizations recharge their teams and reignite their purpose. Kathy's work not only helps communities improve the energy of their staff, but it also enriches the lives of residents. I first met Kathy at Leading Edge New York when I was speaking there earlier this year, and she was one of the featured keynote presenters and was really enamored with her and what she had to say. So Kathy, welcome to Roundtable Talk.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And let's start with you and your role as a corporate energy expert. How would you describe the work you do?
Well, I chose that term energy because the work that I do revolves around culture and how does a culture stay energized. And a lot of the work came out of the fact that we can talk a little bit more about it later, but I had a daughter who actually had the disease of no energy. She had a mitochondrial dysfunction. And so as I did my work, this whole theme of energy just really bubbled up because it's a great way to describe what it feels like to be on a team. You know, if you're on an energized team, you know, if you're on a team that's not so energized. So it felt like a very good description of how to engage, you know, my clients to feel about their culture. You want it to be energized.
That's great. So you do talk, you know, obviously a lot about energy, but in the context of senior living leadership or really any leadership, what's the difference between energy and morale?
Well, morale's a little bit narrow. You know, it's kind of like, oh, we lost this. We have a poor morale. You know, you're kind of in the dumps. But energy permeates all parts of the culture. It's, you know, are our teams engaged with residents on really well today? That's an energy boost. Is our marketing doing the job that they need to be doing today? That's an energy boost. So morale just can float in and out and you can have a bad day, but energy is what gets things done in a culture. It means things are firing on all the right pistons and such.
That makes sense. And I'm sure it is one of those things that it's, you know, it's hard to describe, but you know it when it's there.
Exactly. You know it like when you walk into an organization, something that you might use, you know, like a brand that you might trust or use. You walk in or you purchase it and you're like, yes, this is exactly what I wanted, or this is the exact way I wanted to feel when I ate at this restaurant. So yeah, we know it.
Indeed. So what are the most common signs you see of a leadership team running out of energy, and how early should an organization act?
Well, it's pretty apparent when we have people showing up late. We have people leaving teams. We have poor communication is probably one of the first ones I see, because interesting, I worked with an organization, this was last fall, and they had brought in all of their directors. And I walked around to the different tables and somebody said, we just heard this news today. She just told me this. I had not heard this. And it was actually information that should have trickled down from the top. And so when I see little cues like that, where things aren't being communicated or the team doesn't feel like there's transparency, that's the time to start talking about how is this team working? How are we energized? So it can happen pretty easily with a breakdown in just a couple things. So it could be a breakdown in civility can de-energize a team. You know, you got a bad apple on that team who's stirring things up, brings their political opinions in, or says things that are derogatory. That can quench energy on a team. It could be just as far as physical burnout. You know, our teams might just be burning out because it's too much of a physical demand because we're short staffed. So lots of signs that can show a team burning out.
You know, and you bring up the word civility, and you know, that's it's interesting, and it's something that I would hope we would have learned when we were young, you know, the just the notion of that. But that is so critical, just to, and I mean, it's something that I would wish we wouldn't even have to talk about. But civility is so critical.
It's so critical. Yeah, if you'd let me share a name, because she's done amazing work, and this is on the clinical side of things. I have a very good friend. Her name is Dr. Renee Thompson, and she's a nurse leader. And she devotes her entire business to eradicating bullying and incivility in healthcare, and specifically in nurses. Like, I didn't know that was a thing, but she said, no, there's like a saying out there that nurses eat their young, and you're mean to the ones who are coming up, because, and again, it's just this lack of knowledge about how to form a cohesive team. But she's phenomenal, and I invite any of your clinical directors to look her up, because civility.
I'll definitely reach out to her. What was her name again? Could you share it again?
Dr. Renee Thompson, and her business is the Healthy Workforce Institute. But I've learned a ton about her, from her, I should say, on civility, and especially civility in healthcare settings, of which I know some of your listeners may not have a true healthcare setup, but just, we need to be kind. And some of those things that bubble up are just, you know, having restraint, you know, just because you see it or could say it doesn't mean you have to say it, or being respectful of somebody's culture or their upbringing. There are just a lot of things come into civility that maybe we used to let them slide, and we don't do that anymore. I tell a funny story about my husband one time commenting on a server at dinner. He was like 6'8". He was very tall. And I was like, oh, I know he's going to say something. I know it. And sure enough, he made a comment about his height. And I'm like, we just can't do that anymore. We don't comment on people's bodies. We don't comment on things like that. So just understanding is huge.
Sure, sure. And, you know, the whole notion of bullying, when you reference that, you know, again, as I was saying earlier, I wish we would have all learned these lessons in, you know, kindergarten, first grade, second grade. But bullying is certainly a huge issue with, you know, in as we're developing as human beings. And, you know, I'm just glad that there's a lot of conversation around that. And I'm glad that there's conversation about it as we age as well. And yeah. You know, and I have heard a couple of instances when I've been at various communities where there is almost that sense of bullying or incivility when a new resident comes in and they want to sit at with a group, and the group says, no, that's reserved for so-and-so, or, you know, we're full at this table. And, yeah. You know, it's such a shame, because everybody just wants to belong and wants to fit in somehow and be a part of something.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, it's also interesting. We've have a little bit of a mantra here at our organization that we always, you know, ask people to assume best intent. You know, if somebody, you know, you might take something slightly, you know, you might take slight offense at something, but assume best intent, and then you can have a conversation about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But so you do talk a lot about energy, not just for teams, but for leaders themselves. How does a leader's personal energy impact the overall culture of a community, a team, an organization of whatever size or form?
Well, there's definitely a trickle-down effect, you know, from any leader. I was just with a group of yesterday, and their leader was there. So their CEO had come, and he was participating in the session. And I could tell right away, like, you just get that feeling, right? So he addressed everybody right away. And there was his energy, his warmth, his, you know, just his demeanor, his respect for his team, versus if someone's, like, say, burned out, worn out, stressed out, maxed out, they're not showing up as their best version of themselves. You know, you can then, you can speak sharply to somebody if you are stressed out. You can ignore somebody's, you know, need if you're stressed out. So I do like to say that everybody in all forms of leadership, we need to be remembering to restore, to fill our cups, to take that 2 minutes. It doesn't take long. When I present, I often end with a 2 minute meditation where everyone just breathes deep for a couple minutes, because it's so important. We know everyone's busy and to-do list, but if you are a leader, that trickles down.
Absolutely. That's great. Well said. So you have a Platinum Power program created specifically for senior living organizations. What tactics from that program have you found to be most effective in helping leadership teams power up?
Well, that's a big question, because the Platinum Power program is a 6-month program. So, I mean, I speak to organizations, everything from a leadership keynote to, a few months, but Platinum 6 months. And so we really deep dive onto the things that are the energy drains. And I will say, it sounds so basic, but yet it is so, so imperative. It's this clear, concise communication. We think we might be having, those conversations that are necessary, but often our people aren't hearing it, or it's not getting to them quite the right way. I like to say, if someone has a question and the answer has not readily presented itself, they're going to create their own information. And that's where gossip gets into an organization. So having some of those clear, concise communication things set up so everyone knows how to get information, where they're getting their information, and if they trust the information. So that's just one of them. That's like basic. Often it's funny when I start to talk, it's like, we're going to talk about clear, concise communication. Sometimes I see eyes roll. It's like, well, yeah, because one time an executive director said, Kathy, you don't know, they find me in the parking lot. They're at me all the time. They're bombarding me all the time. And to that, I said, well, then that's because they don't know when it's appropriate, because you haven't set that boundary and you haven't said, this is the time we discuss this. Those things need to be on your calendar. They need to be non-negotiable. I've worked with other leaders that have said, oh yeah, we have that. Every Tuesday from 12 to 1:30 is the time they know they can come in, make an appointment, or just show up and we will have the discussion. But setting those boundaries, but making sure they're getting the information they need.
That's a great point. Setting boundaries and setting expectations. We hear that all the time. Manage expectations. And I can't tell you how many times, if expectations aren't managed, how it can be disconcerting. But that's a great point. So turnover is one of the biggest challenges in senior living, and certainly in the clinical area, and then in other areas as well. Teams are stretched thin. Stress levels are high. In that kind of environment, how do leaders build and sustain engagement and really maintain that workforce?
A lot of it, I believe, is attraction and the stories that we tell. I do a whole session on what story are you actually telling to attract. So when I work with teams, I say, why would someone want to work here? Why would they want to give their energy, their time, their talents? What is the draw? And sometimes that question just like stops people in their tracks. It's like, well, we offer good benefits. We offer this. It's like, but what is the culture? Like, we know we want to show up where we are appreciated, where we are acknowledged, where we find joy in the day. So a lot of what, when I work with a team, I talk about what is the story that you're telling. We've gotten pretty good at what the story we want to tell, to our prospective residents, right? Because we want to, have more residents, but we don't go quite as deep with what is that story we're telling prospective, employees. So
that's
always ask
point.
Them, go a little deeper on what you think it really means to work here. And then I help them develop personal purpose statements, so they understand they're part of this team and how their purpose on the team matters. So there's a lot of deep digging there to get people to, as I say, give their time and their talent and not go up the street because it's a dollar more an hour. That's not what we want.
That's a great point. And I know certainly through the pandemic, as a lot of the QSRs, the fast food restaurants or other types of organizations were increasing their hourly rate. Some were even, I heard McDonald's in, I think it was Georgia or Florida, they were paying $50 just to come to an interview. And, some of those kinds of things. And people were taking other jobs, leaving the senior living community, and then realized after a few months, it's not feeding my soul. Yes, I might make another dollar or two. I'm not saying that wasn't impactful on their lives, but it wasn't giving them what they needed. So, you know, it is important to always reflect on that. And that's a really good point. And as, you know, as we're talking with clients or other organizations out there about their brand, what does it mean?
Right.
You know, I love how you said it regarding the team members, because we always want to invite the team members in so that the brand speaks not only to the residents, potential residents, the family members, those folks, but also to the current team members and the prospective team members at any level of the organization. That is so important to have that thought through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not just a job.
It's not just a job. Like, this is one industry that is not just an industry. This is, you're building a family, you're building a home. And we have to really think about what types of people would work in that home, and what could, and then go the other way. And what could we be doing for those people to make them feel like this is home as well? So, yeah.
Absolutely. No, well said. So why is trust among staff and leaders such a foundational element in senior living success? And I know that, you know, from our conversations, you have a new keynote titled Unlock Trust. So talk a little about that as well. But why is trust such a foundational element?
Well, trust is a foundational element because we are hardwired in our brains to either fear something or trust it. So there's a little gland or little area in the brain called the amygdala. And the amygdala, the whole time, every day, every minute of the day, is saying, is this safe or is this not safe? Do I have to fight it? Do I have to flight it? And the way we light that up in our residents' brains, in our people who are on our team, in their brains, so they trust, in the family members who are entrusting, you know, your organization with their loved one, it has to feel like it's not a threat. And so from the very basic foundations, we need to think about what are we putting off so I don't feel like a threat. And there are a few ways that we do this. One of them, again, is through this communication, being very transparent, letting people know. I say transparency is the why. Why did I do that? Why are we doing this? Why am I making you go on a tour right now when you've already been here before? You know, they're like, why am I doing that? They want to know the why, and the why builds trust. So I go through five dimensions of trust in that keynote, and how when each of those is aligned, that amygdala lights up. And when the amygdala is happy, then you're producing, you know, the other brain hormones that say, this is fun, this is safe, I'm okay. But without it, we're just in that fear zone.
Interesting. Now, you know, I won't ask you to go through all of that. Or we'd be here all day, but which I would love. But what are one or two of the dimensions of trust? You know, if you don't mind sharing.
Yeah, well, I mentioned transparency, so we sort of talked about that. But I'm gonna talk about one that I think in senior care we do pretty well, except we also mess it up a bit, and that is empathy. So I like to give the example of, when someone is going through something, they've had, I call it the three D's. There's a death, a diagnosis, or a divorce. We show up, and we often are toting a casserole, right? We're like, I must show up with some food. I'll bring them some food because surely that's what they want. You know, everyone, when they're going through something, but we've never asked generally, do you want a casserole? You just, you know, I'm going to bring dinner. I'm going to show up. So I like to say,
that's a really good point.
Yeah. Sympathy is showing up with a casserole, and it will feed, you know, feed them, feed their stomachs, fill the fridge. But empathy is actually filling the heart. It's saying, what do you actually need from me right now that would help you? When my daughter was diagnosed with her degenerative disease, I had a friend, one of my dearest friends, and she asked that question. And I said, I don't need any more food. Please don't bring me food. I said, honestly, I had four young children at the time. I go, I can't even get my laundry done because I'm dealing with all this. Just, I'm coming over to do your laundry. That's empathy. That's stepping into someone's shoes and saying, I'm here for you. What can I do? And so in senior living, I feel like on all levels, so we can talk about it from the team to the resident level, I see a lot of sympathy. Like, oh, I do feel for you, blah, blah. But actually stepping in, you know, maybe there's confusion around a medication or there's confusion around a policy. Actually stepping in, what could I do for you right now that would help you understand? What do you need from me right now? Instead of just making the assumption. Or a team member, you see a team member who's having, you know, a bit of a tough time. Maybe they can't adapt to a new software system. And instead of saying, just do it this way. I get it. It's hard, but just do it this way. That's a little bit of sympathy. That's a little bit of frustration. But to say, what could I do for you right now that would make this easier on you? How could we work together? That's empathy. And that's what builds trust. When we know that someone's in our pain, in our situation, that trust is built. So that's one that I like to talk about quite a bit because it's, we think we have it, but sometimes we don't.
Yeah. And, you know, I think perhaps people who are attracted to senior living have that innately in them, but not always. And not every day do we exhibit that. So I do think it's important to keep that in mind. And, you know, the thing I like too about how you're unpacking it is, you know, how many times have you heard somebody say, trust me? But if you haven't actually established that or earned that, let's say, how can you trust people?
Exactly. Yeah. It is an earned thing. Yeah. So we have to be sure. And then civility falls into that. And we talked a little bit about civility. Like, I'm not going to trust you if you come at me with something that doesn't feel good to me. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. No, great points. In a field where teams are constantly giving so much of themselves, it can be easy to move from one task to the next without pausing to celebrate. How important is it to stop and recognize those wins?
Well, you've heard me speak, so you know how much I love the thought of celebrating. And I shared a statistic where when we are acknowledged, even just by name, within the first couple of weeks of coming into a new organization, retention levels go up by like 22% because we don't just want to be celebrated, we want to be acknowledged. So the acknowledgement could even be, I understand this is hard for you. Your first day must have had some questions or it was difficult. Do you want to talk about that? That's an acknowledgement that will keep somebody coming back the next day to say, oh, my new job, they actually saw that it was difficult on my first day and they asked me about it. So that's a type of acknowledgement. But then there's celebrating, which I just think should be done every day. Every day there should be something that should be celebrated. And when I work with teams, we start to carve out what could you actually celebrate that everybody could be a part of? It can't just be, what is your census number? It can't just be, you know, we reached the budget number. We have to think about those small wins and help people in their own roles say, what would be something that would be a success in your role? Like if it's an activities professional, how many people showed up for the activity? Did you really create something that was engaging? That's a win. Let's do some sort of celebrating. And of course, there's all kinds of different ways that we can celebrate somebody. And we talked about one of those earlier. If you want to share it, you feel free to.
Sure, sure. Yeah. And you're talking about the music, the
song,
right?
Yes, I'm talking about the music. Yeah.
Yeah. Share what that was. And, you know, we'll put a link to the song we created for you. And, but I don't want to steal your thunder. I loved that.
Yeah. So we've talked about different ways to actually use AI to create some celebratory types of mementos. So I like to use the example. I always say, everybody's got a Maria on their team. And people are like, Kathy, what do you mean? Everyone's got a Maria. I go, Maria shows up every day. She does exactly what she's supposed to do. She's warm. She's friendly. She doesn't complain. She just, you know, she doesn't get as much acknowledgement because she actually does everything right. Well, maybe you just want to create a little memento for her. So there is an AI tool called, I always pronounce it, I think it's Sono, S-U-N-O. You can get a free version. you can just type in exactly what Maria does. Maria shows up every day. She's got a smile. My residents love her. And she likes soft rock music. So you pick the genre, you know, I always want to go back and redo Maria's song and put in hip hop just to see what it might sound like. But then it will come up with a song within like less than a minute. And you can share that. You can play it on your PA. You could get people dancing to Maria's song. I mean, it could be a whole event that doesn't cost much, but it creates a vibe and it creates that feeling of I am seen and I am recognized.
I think that's just a beautiful way to use AI for you know, something really good. And you know, as you know, I tested out myself and it really is brilliant how it worked. So thank you for sharing that with all of us. And again, we'll share the link, as we share this podcast out. But yeah, it's suno.com. So there's a question that we ask every Roundtable Talk guest. What are you looking forward to as you age? You've been working with a lot of senior living organizations. You've been working with a lot of older adults. What are you looking forward to for yourself?
That's awesome. Well, it's a great question because my first grandbaby is 3 weeks old. So I leave tomorrow to go see her. I was there for her, you know, when she was born. She's in Denver, and I'm in Ohio, so a bit of a distance. So yeah, I'm looking forward to.
Congratulations. What's
her
name?
Thank you, if I may ask. Yeah, I mean, that's a very personal note that, yes, I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Do you mind sharing her name?
Pardon?
Do you mind sharing her name?
Her name is Raina, R-A-Y-N-A, Raina. And then my daughter chose to name her off after the daughter I lost, her sister. So her middle name is Merritt, Raina Merritt.
Raina Merritt, that's a beautiful name. And what a wonderful way to honor her other sister.
Yeah, yeah. And I will have to say, as I age, I am also looking forward to staying curious. That's kind of a mantra I've lived by, and I try to help teams do that as well, because one of the things that I feel can be one of those energy drains in a team is if our mindset towards change becomes negative. And I think change is so exponential right now that, and again, some of us who've been around a little longer, it's like, well, that's not how it was when I went to high school. We didn't do it that way. I don't want to be that person. I want to be the one that has a mindset that is curious towards change. And I do this exercise when I work with teams. I said, when we look at change and mindset, let's look at how we can be curious, flexible, and optimistic. And then I say, pick something that is a change right now and apply those three filters to it. If you have a brand new software coming in and you know it's going to be a disruption to every location you have, all right, apply curiosity to it then and say, well, okay, I'm curious as to how this will affect, you know, my facilities team. And then call them and say, what are you curious about? And then how can we be optimistic and flexible about it? So I, as I age, want to apply those same principles to my mindset to not fear the disruption of change.
That's great. That's great. Now, you'd mentioned your daughter, Merritt. And I know when you spoke at Leading Edge New York a few months back, you told that story. Do you mind sharing that story? Because that really is what propelled you into this space of corporate energy expert. Is that right?
Sure. Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
Please share if you don't mind.
No. So yes, my youngest daughter, I had four children in 7 years. It was pretty packed in, pretty, you know, a lot of moving parts there. And when she was 3 months old, she started having seizures. And so we thought things were fine with her. And as we started to explore it, and doctors had no answers. And she was starting to, you know, exhibit signs of failure to thrive. She wasn't eating well. Her muscle tone didn't develop. And it took us on a year-long journey to find out what was wrong. And when we found out, it was a mitochondrial dysfunction. And that means every cell in her body did not turn food into energy properly. And the doctors gave us the diagnosis that the best we could hope for was 2 years. Those were the exact words. And so I had minored, I'd majored in business, but I'd minored in food management because I just always had a passion for food. And I thought maybe food business might come into play in my life. But instead, what that did is it gave me enough knowledge about nutrition. And this was, the year was 2001. So it was before we could Google everything or AI everything. And I really went in and just, I got certified in plant-based nutrition. I talked to experts. I'm like, how do cells stay energized? How does this even work? My daughter lived 20 years. She was never hospitalized her entire time. She was alive. She was healthy. She was infantile, though. She was, you know, never spoke, never walked, never fed herself. And then her last year of life, I actually did find an amazing facility for adults with intellectual and physical disabilities. And so while I had had care in the home, I'd never done that full experience of trusting someone with your loved one. And it was an amazing experience. But she did propel me first into speaking, which I was a bank trainer, so I always stood in front of people. So I did a lot of speaking, but just in the caregiving role, like, people are burned out. I was that caregiver. So yeah, she really propelled me to do amazing things for helping other people feel energized.
Yeah. And I only ask you to share that story because I know you shared it in front of the group, and I just thought that was a beautiful story, and what a testament to you, your family, and her, you know, her memory. It's, yeah. You know, it really is inspiring. Sad. I know there were rough days all along the way, but that was a great way to really help others, you know, from that experience.
Yeah. Well, I might add too, and it's great that you asked me to share the story, but I think that's what we need to do more of in this whole senior care space, in the whole caregiving space. Why do you care? Why do you want to show up? Why do you want to help other people? Because when we ask that question, and again, this is getting to, again, being acknowledged, the stories come out. And often, and you know this, and most listeners probably know this, that most people have a story about why they want to help other people, why they want to care for other people, why they want to be in this. And I think, and you as the marketer know that those stories are so important. They help us tell the whys, and that also builds the trust. It's like, okay, if this person cared for their own family member and they've got that story, I can feel that trust too.
Yep. You have that kind of deeper understanding, which, you know, leads to empathy and all of the other components. But that's great. So thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. And, you know, it's interesting, just shifting the conversation a bit to joy. You know, you link emerging teams or energizing teams to improved resident care and joy. And, you know, I loved how you bring joy into everything you do. That was one of the books that you've written.
Right.
And you speak on a lot, but how does team energy affect the resident experience? And also in that, talk a little bit about your philosophy of joy.
Oh,
I mean, it's such a simple word.
It
is something that we all talk about and use, but I love how you've how you unpack it.
Yeah. Well, in the keynote that I do talk about, the joy jolt effect, some of that came about because I was watching senior living teams post pandemic. First of all, I wrote the book about power up because everyone was low energy, whatever. But then I realized it wasn't just the energy that might not be there. It was the detachment from the joy of why we serve. And I did a lot of research, and there's a study out there by the Kearney Consulting Group, and it's called Joy at Work. And they did this study with leaders, and they had, I think the study base was about 2,500 professionals. And they posed the question, should we experience joy at work? And 90% of those who were surveyed said yes. But when the survey went deeper, less than 50%, only in the 40s, were people who actually said they did experience joy at work.
Interesting.
Now, I talk about joy coming from connections, and that one of the ways as humans that we experience joy is to have that connection. And that's one of the beauties of senior living, is that we do have more opportunities to build that joy. But there's also some problems with joy. I say, yes, there's problems with joy, in that we can't build that expectation so high that our residents or their family members are going to think, oh, it's just, we're going to have so much joy because we're now here. So really building in the expectation for what it is, and then how we plan to experience it. And there is a difference between joy and happiness, I also like to say. So helping teams understand and helping residents understand what that is, I just think is so important. Joy is deeper. Joy goes deeper, and it doesn't revolve around circumstances. So we can help even a team member that's struggling or a resident that's struggling tap into joy even when things are difficult.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think as I've aged, I've, you know, spoken with friends and such over the years about happiness. And you know, when people say they're not happy, and I don't begrudge them their feelings, they feel how they feel. But, you know, I guess I've maybe come to the realization, maybe it's my father's kind of stoic Norwegian sense, but you know, happiness is fleeting. And you know, you need to find and experience happiness, or we wouldn't, you know, life wouldn't be very fun. Mm-hmm. But I think contentedness is important. And when I heard you speak about joy versus happiness, a light bulb went off for me there as well. I think it was consistent with some of what I was wrestling with as I talked to friends about, you know, happiness and what does that mean? And, you know, the maybe the unrealistic expectation that we should always be at this level of happiness that it's just inachievable or unachievable, and it will just make us miserable because we'll keep chasing something that we can never achieve.
Right. Absolutely. Because if you remember what I spoke about, the Harvard professor, Arthur C. Brooks, who's also written a number of books. One of them is Live the Life You Want, but he teaches the happiness course at Harvard because they realized that these young people didn't really understand how to be happy. And he says happiness takes three things. It takes something needs to be pleasurable. It needs to be provide satisfaction, and it must have purpose. So, you know, that's an ice cream cone. That is pleasurable. It's satisfying, and it has a purpose of, you know, either having you walk to the ice cream parlor or fill your tummy. But joy doesn't revolve around circumstances. I could close my eyes right now and just think about an ice cream cone and the last time I had one, and think about maybe experiencing it with my new granddaughter someday, and I can get those feelings to bubble up. So it is, happiness is fleeting and in the moment and revolves around circumstances, but joy, when we are open to it, we can tap into it every day.
Great point. So what are the most effective ways for a community to inject joy into care and you know, even when the resources are stretched for them?
You said for the, like, the whole community.
Yeah, like a senior living community, right. You know, injecting joy into the care that they're doing, you know, when they're perhaps stretched thin, or, you know, when things are, you know, things can be pretty heavy sometimes in terms of what's happening in the world or in their world at that time.
Right. Well, the first component of what I talk about is the joy jolt. And I say a joy jolt is an inner spark with an outer reach. So we can have these inner sparks, and if we choose to share it with somebody, then it can have an outer reach. So I give an example of a senior living facility where someone was telling me, I actually spoke at NAP, so the National Activities Professionals Conference. And she came up to me, she's like, I did a joy jolt. I had a joy jolt last week. And I said, what was your joy jolt? And she said, well, we put out our bird feeders for the first time. You know, we'd had them inside for whatever season. And she said, we put them out. And I immediately saw that there were birds, and there was a Baltimore Oriole, that might not be the right bird. There was a bird that she saw that she wanted everyone to know about. So she got one of her residents who she knew also was very much into birding. And she's like, get over here. Look, they're back. Whatever bird. That was an inner spark. And then they went and told everyone else about it. So it, you know, with an outer reach. So we have those moments all the time to share the joy. But I think with the big idea that I, when I talk about this, is purpose. When we connect to our purpose in our work, we have much, many more moments to experience the joy. And when I work with teams, I have an exercise where we create a personal purpose statement for everyone on the team. So the everyday isn't just about them, and it isn't necessarily just about a resident, but it's about this bigger purpose. What is this thing that I do? And there's a statistic out there that says 97% of people who say they experience purpose at work are more engaged and productive, compared to around 50% who do not experience purpose. They're not as engaged and productive.
I can see that. It makes it makes logical sense, but that is a stark contrast between the two.
Right. Right. Yeah. So just when we do this, I work with the purpose isn't about your job description. It's how you make someone feel within your job. So I don't need to know what you actually do to make a purpose statement. You just need to know about how do you connect? How do you engage? Do you make someone feel well? So we use connection themes, different themes that help people understand that their purpose. And then my favorite thing is I like to always say, tell me about a time or tell me about something that you do that is not in your job description. And that one always gets everyone laughing. I'm like, I do everything. Nothing's in my job description. But your purpose might be bigger. And I hear things, well, I help families understand, you know, some of the dynamics. I serve as a therapist for them. You know, it's just, there's a lot. So
that's
uncovering
great.
You know, that for your teams and letting them see, like, man, I do go so much deeper than what is just a job description. And that fills the soul, brings some of that joy.
Absolutely. And, you know, in talking with leaders in communities or frontline team members or even the, you know, kind of the middle level supervisors, managers, it is interesting how there's work that has to get done. And, you know, certainly in the care settings, there are protocols and, you know, other sorts of things that rules that have to be followed to make sure that people are safe. But those, I think, joy moments are when there's enough air in the day, if I can use that term, air meaning time, where they can actually connect. They can, if a resident or an older adult just needs to talk to somebody or just wants to be together, that they can have a few extra moments. It doesn't even have to be long, but just to spend time and connect and going all the way back to earlier in the conversation, knowing their name, knowing, you know, perhaps their grandchildren, perhaps what they're, you know, what things they're passionate about, and just having a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, it's somebody just yesterday. So I spoke to an organization yesterday and she caught me before I was getting on the elevator to leave. And I'd already pushed the button to call the elevator. She needed to be heard. What she was telling me was her story. And as much as I was ready to go because I had a travel day in front of me, I knew that she needed me to hear her story. And the elevator came and the doors open and the doors closed. And I'm like, I'm not getting on that elevator because she needed that space. And I just think helping our teams understand that, you know, sometimes the greatest gift you can give someone is just to look them in the eye and let them be heard. And it clears up a lot of issues if we can do that. But as you said, we have to find the air, we have to find the space, or we have to put some, you know, some of that into our days.
Absolutely. And I'm sure I know I've been there where all you want to do is get in that car and get on the road and, you know, beat the traffic and everything else. But I'm sure that gave you joy in just having that conversation. And, you know, I know there's the term butterfly effect out there. As I'd mentioned to you, we were just at Leading Edge, the national conference, and ripple moments, and you know that whole notion of the ripple effect was the theme of the conference, and mm-hmm. It was just interesting to think how just some of those simple gestures, you don't know where that's going to go and how it's going to impact that person or the people that they interact with. And I mean, you know, obviously we all know the analogies, but you know, it is just, or the metaphor, but it is just really important to keep that in mind.
Absolutely.
And you know, not to go negative, but if you would have just said, you know, I'm sorry, I don't have time, that would have been such a shame for that person mm-hmm. you interacted with.
Yeah,
so
yeah. It would have been almost disingenuous because I just had spoken about the importance of
that's true. That's
you know,
very true.
The importance of
not that you would have ever done that, but just you know, thinking about the flip side of it would have been a real shame. But so, can you share some examples of communities that shifted their culture and saw real improvements in resident outcomes or satisfaction? I know that you've worked with and spoken to a lot of communities. Do you have any tangible examples you could share?
I do. I have a good example of how a leadership mistake helped reframe an organization's entire communication sort of ethos. So I was working with an organization and they were a large CCRC. They had about 350 residents and they had all levels of care, everything from, you know, independent living to assisted. And they did have a skilled nursing section. And during this 6-month period when I was working with them, I got a call from the CEO and he's like, ah, Kathy, I really screwed up. I did something. He goes, I think I didn't communicate well. And I got some people, you know, a little bit on fire. I'm like, oh, let's talk through it. What happened? And they had their own home health division where they employed 3 or 4 employees so that, you know, people in assisted living, if they needed extra help or, you know, families were able to hire them, you know, for certain things. And they had communicated beautifully with the employees, the ones that they were going to phase out. They realized this was, you know, when it comes down to it, it wasn't a moneymaker. They weren't able to fund it the way it should have been funded. So they found other positions for those people. They offered them this. They said, we'll connect you. If you don't want to stay here, we'll connect you with home health agencies, whatever. He said, we were fine there. And he said, and most of my staff also, you know, realized what was happening. He said, but we forgot to communicate with the families. The families just got a letter one day and that was it. And he said, and they are mad as heck because they counted on that and we didn't spell it out early enough. And so it was just a communication issue. And you think, oh, I communicate well, I know this. But it made them completely reevaluate the gossip that happened within their organization. It made them reevaluate their systems for how they communicated with families because they realized there was a bit of a lapse there. So just that one incident made them reevaluate how they were doing something that wasn't as effective. And it all ended up being fine, but it did take a little while to build that trust back up. And so something as simple as that can erode it.
And good, you know, for that CEO to recognize that there was an issue and learn from it. And, mm-hmm. and that I think is, you know, failure isn't exactly what that was, but you know, that's the best teacher, right? You know, where we can learn from either mistakes or things that might have gone differently or better if we'd handled it in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So change and financial pressure are part of the reality most senior living organizations experience today. How do you maintain culture and joy during times of uncertainty, change, or financial pressure?
I love that question because you mentioned leading age, and I don't know, did they announce at Nationals? I was not at Nationals, but that their theme for next year is change makers.
I have heard that, yes.
So I think
I love that too.
Is, you know, and I tell a story in my Joy Jolt, not the one that you would have heard, but it's new because it's all about change. And again, when you asked what I was looking forward to in aging, I'm looking forward to staying curious and not, you know, putting my brakes on when I see change. But this story that I love to tell and you've heard my joy jolt, and I talk a lot about Starbucks, and I'm a big Starbucks fan, so it's kind of like a coffee theme and Starbucks. But I'll just share this anecdote because I think it's very poignant to anyone who's facing change and disruption. Howard Schultz was the founder and CEO of Starbucks for years, and he founded the company on the premise of excellent brewed hot coffees and espresso. And he got this from visiting Italy, and he wanted to recreate those Italian coffee shops where people came and gathered and talked and enjoyed amazing coffee. And then at some point in the early 2000s, late 90s, he's hit with his team wanting to offer cold coffees. A couple other coffee shops had started offering these cold drinks. And he's like, absolutely not. That is not my vision for this company. My company's vision is about hot, wonderful coffee and espresso drinks. Well, they kept on him. Like, no, we think this could be a good, you know, revenue stream. We think this is. He finally relented. Over 60% of Starbucks income is from cold drinks now. So it has totally shifted the whole organization. So I tell that story just to say, you know, that is an iconic company. And if they had not made that shift when people were asking for it, they would not be the company they are today. Applying that to senior living, I recently heard someone talking about, you know, the next generation coming in to senior care. What do they like to do? They don't play bingo. They don't, you know, do some of the things. They go to sports bars. They do things. So it's this reconfiguring in our minds, even with tight budgets, even with changing regulations, that we have to stay current to what the needs of our residents are. You know, what do they need? And so, you know, there might be a sports bar in every resident coming up, or, you know, whatever else that, you know, this generation is into. So, yeah.
You know, that's a great point. I mean, something like a sports bar. I know, you know, a lot of communities have pubs and that sort of thing. But just acknowledging, I mean, in some ways, it is really simple. What do people like to do? Mm-hmm. And then offer opportunities for them to do the things that they like to do already.
So, right. Yeah.
Great point. How do you help communities identify the systems, processes, or patterns that drain energy? Mm. How do you approach that?
Yeah, well, I have a whole system where we go through that, where we're talking about a day and what happens in a day. And I ask them to, you know, step into it and imagine. And then we give it a score. Okay, that drains me of energy. Okay, that does energize me. And then we ask the team members to start to share what their energizers are and what, you know, they really don't like. Like, I do not like to do Excel spreadsheets. And at this one portion of my job, I've got to put it in an Excel spreadsheet because that's how they want to see it. But you got somebody in a totally different department that I love Excel spreadsheets. That's how my brain works. Let me help you with that. So there's some of this unidentified energy loss on teams. But it really just takes kind of breaking it down. Like, what do I do that energizes me? And asking them to kind of break it down. And then we kind of have this whole coming together and say, how could we help each other? How could we make this a more energizing thing? Or does it really have to be an Excel spreadsheet? Could I send you a voice memo? I could just do it in a voice memo and give you the highlights, where we start to identify things that aren't working.
Well, that's a great point, because, I mean, at some point, you might just need to have it in an Excel spreadsheet. And I mean, I don't mean to sound crass, but that person might just have to work with it. But is there a different way to go about it? Maybe, you know, is there a way to make it a little easier? And that was just simply one example. But nonetheless, you know, I love that you can kind of think through, how can you get the job done in a way that is a bit more joyful, a bit more meaningful for the individual. So
Like, let's go to budgeting time. Okay, budgeting time stresses everyone out.
Absolutely.
Everyone is stressed. You hear it. I see it. I'm like, I can't take a call. It's budgeting time. We're in budget meetings. We're in this, like, we know that. We know that's coming. We know it's part of the ethos of what we have to do. So how could we make that, you know, anywhere between 4 and 6 weeks? Some companies get it done a lot quicker. Some people are, you know, how could we make that better? Like, what would that process look like if we weren't all drained of energy? Well, maybe it starts with starting earlier in the year. Maybe it's like, okay, I'm going to keep track of this a little better so that when we get to budgeting, I'm more prepared and I'm not scouring and looking for things that I don't have. Or maybe it's that we bring in a temporary and the temporary could, you know, temporary office staff could help cover something. I don't know, a task that I can't do because I'm in budgeting. There's lots of ways to look at it. But the biggest thing, and I talk about this, it's like when you're doing a remodeling project, the first thing you do is an assessment. Okay, do I have enough electric running to this? How will I have to redo my plumbing? So assessing is huge. And sometimes we just overlook what might be draining us.
Yep. Great point. So a lot of organizations roll out new initiatives or trainings that work for a while and then fade away. How can teams make sure that change isn't temporary and becomes a permanent part of their systems and culture?
And to that, I say maybe it needed to be go away.
Yeah. Like, great point.
Sometimes we get this like, oh, this is going to be the greatest change ever. And maybe it's actually not. And so we tried it out. We have to give ourselves a little grace that not every change is going to be long lasting, but hey, we tried it out and it didn't work. So I do like
that's a really good point.
Give yourself some grace if it doesn't work and move on to something else. Now, that said, maybe you just didn't give enough time, enough energy, enough planning to make it work. If it's a change that must work because something was so broken, it needs a change. I'd say just, again, make sure the assessment and the communication around it are high level because you can't get in there implementing these changes. And this is especially true with technology. We just bought the greatest new software. It's going to make your lives easier. Well, everyone is like, that is not going to make my life easier. These really need to be developed. When you're selling the change, it needs to be developed of exactly why and how. So
that's great. That's great. Now, what metrics should senior living executives track to follow their culture and team energy changes and understand that they're working?
Well, the number one metrics is, of course, retention. You know, you are going to keep good people if they are happy with the way things are working. And that's just really obvious. And again, and then it gets back to call-offs. You know, what are the call-offs coming in? And then, of course, resident satisfaction. You know, if you're hearing complaints from your residents, it means your team is not serving their needs and their needs are most important. So I think sometimes what I've seen is that isn't happening quite enough. They're not pulling residents quite enough. They're not asking for the positives from the residents quite enough. You know, the residents love to complain, you know, when things aren't right. But I'd love to see more of that positive. Who really helped you? Who smiled at you the most this week? What did we see? So, you know, that engagement metrics is important as well.
That's great. Great points. So we've had a great conversation over the last hour or so, but last question, what have you learned that you wish you could have told your younger self?
That's pretty easy because it was advice from my dad, but he didn't give it to me until I was in about my 40s.
He would have told it to your younger self.
Yeah, he should have told it. He should have told it to my younger self. But it is my mantra almost all the time, and that is everything will take longer than you think it will. And whenever things aren't like just like that, I always go back to that. It's like everything will take longer than you think it will. You know, change is not instantaneous. Making connections are not instantaneous. Building relationships, it all takes time. And therein is, you know, dance in the mystery of that time. You know, that time is helping you develop and helping you become what you need to be. But just set the expectation that it's not all going to happen overnight.
That's fantastic. And with that, Kathy, thank you so much for the time that you spent with us, sharing your wisdom, sharing your thoughts, your perspectives, you're certainly honoring and celebrating Merit's memory in what you do.
No, thank you. Thank you. Well, I've so appreciated your time as well and how you help those connect and grow and, you know, hone their own skills.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you. This is Derek Dunham with Varsity's Roundtable Talk. And I'd also like to thank our producer, Dave Schaffner, and our engineer, Matt Campbell. We'll see you next time.